Hello and welcome into another episode of Gifted Kid Messy Adult, the show where potential went to die. I am your host, Ellie Michaels. I use she, her.
I'm your host, Jessica Michaels. I use she, they.
And today we're talking about picking your battles. What are we talking about? Like, what do we mean by that, Jess?
It starts off with you being brilliant, because that is what inspired this episode. We were talking about work, and both of us have small businesses that we run, and then I've got many years of experience in corporate America. And as we were talking through kind of what was happening in our week, you mentioned something that was happening at work that you could fix or that you could have an opinion about, but you said, I don't get paid enough to have an opinion. And I thought that was so brilliant, because it wasn't something that you needed to deal with. It was totally somebody else's sandbox, right? It wasn't even like, it wasn't your battle to pick. It was somebody else's battle. Mm-hmm. But it reminded me of when a couple times in my career. So when I was working there was an office here in Colorado, and there was a rule that the admin assistant sent out to everybody in Colorado. The whole state needed to know that we weren't allowed to put tape on the walls. So whatever happened, didn't matter, no tape on the walls. And I took this into my inventory of rules or things to know, and I made it my mission for some reason, if I saw anybody taping things to the wall, to let them know, you can't tape things to the wall. You know, Veronica said, no taping things to the wall. And it really became something that I just couldn't let go of, to the point where when my manager would say, hey, do this, put this chart up, and we would need to tape it to the wall, I would get really upset. Like, no, we can't tape this to the wall if I've got to go get, you know, some putty or something, because we can't stick this to the wall. And he'd be like, just tape it. Just tape it. Like, no, Veronica said no. And it, that's not the only time that I have picked up something like that, where, you know, somebody says it, and then I take that on my shoulders. In corporate, when you're, especially the larger the company you're working in, when you're working on a collaborative project, everybody has things that they want done or things that are important to them that are important to literally nobody else. And for some reason, I can't let go of those things like they were a directive from the CEO. And that is something that I have seen happen to my clients also, which is, oh, so-and-so said this, so-and-so said this, so-and-so said this. And every one of them is treated like a policy, because to us, there is no battle, apparently, that we will not fight.
Nope.
So I was impressed by your philosophy.
Well, it was not always thus. I mean, I'm reminded of when I was doing remodeling work, and I was working in the home of a lady who was pretty uptight and kind of looking for reasons to be upset, you might say. And there was another contractor there who was having a cigarette kind of close to a open door or open window or something where like the cigarette smell might get into the house. And like, I just kind of mentioned to the dude, like, hey, you probably don't want to do that there. Mrs. Blah, blah, blah is probably going to get upset about that. And I got reprimanded by my manager for like sticking my nose in someone else's business, or like daring to presume to tell this more senior person what to do. And my argument was like, no, I'm not telling them what to do. Like, if you see somebody park in front of a fire hydrant, you're probably going to go, hey man, you shouldn't park in front of that fire hydrant. You're going to get a ticket. I'm not going to tackle the dude and take his keys and go park his car. But I am going to be like, hey, in case you missed it, that's a thing. Just like, it as like a friendly reminder. Like,
yeah, to me, that's what I was doing. You know, mm-hmm. like when I'm working on a project and I know that we have to put something in black and white because the marketing department only wants us to use black and white. If I see something that's being put together in blue and green, I'm going to say, hey, that needs to be in black and white, because I don't want the people that I'm working with to get in trouble, you know, or mm-hmm. I mean, not that I think they would be, you know, in getting punishment, but they would still be in a situation where they would be doing something that somebody else wouldn't like. And so there could be a situation, a conflict or something, or they could do work that needed to be redone. And I have the information that could prevent that from happening. So I really feel obligated to share that information. I also feel obligated to the marketing department who wants stuff done in black and white because I know it's important to them. And so I really struggle with knowing when to keep quiet in those situations, like which battle to pick, because it doesn't necessarily have the weight of something else. You know, maybe it's they want it in black and white, but that's like not super important, but something else is critically important, and that's where we should spend our time. And I want to spend it on the black and white issue because to me, that is a conflict that I could fix and I'm responsible for it.
But Jess, what happens if you drive without a license? What could possibly
it was what was that in? The Grand Tour?
It was either the Grand Tour or Top Gear, but they were talking to somebody, I want to say German. It sounds like a German thing, and they were just trying to find out what the penalty is for driving without a valid license in their country. And they kept asking, what happens if you drive without a license? And the answer kept being, no, you cannot do this. You cannot drive without a license. Well, you're right. I understand. That's the rules. That's the laws. What happens if you drive without a... You cannot drive without a license. This cannot be done. And it kind of clicks with our neurodivergent black and white thinking. Because there's also the thing of, like, you're a rules follower, right? Like, if you get a rule, you're going to follow the rule. And if anybody else isn't following that rule, that's an issue. I'm a rules lawyer, where if I understand what the rule is for and I'm aware that that's meaningless or pointless, I will smile and nod as you explain this rule to me, and then I will act as if it has never existed, because as far as I'm concerned, it shouldn't. But if a rule does make sense and I see someone else not following that rule, I am aghast. How dare they? That is ridiculously awful. How you...
Do you intervene?
If... See, that's always the question, right? Like the I don't get paid enough to have an opinion was on the logo for this company that I'm helping do a rollout for. And I'm just making the video stuff. I'm shooting the assets and compiling it together into an editing thing later. And then I just need to have the logo handed to me, and then I slap it on the thing. I thought the logo was hideous, but I was not being paid enough to mention that or to consult on that, because that's not my job. And that's a whole other department. And I was later hired to redo the logo, but not because I said anything about it.
I think that's just so smart, because it's one of those situations that sounds better than it ends up being at work to be a rule follower. But if you are, you know, if I'm speaking to the director of, you know, national sales, and I'm supposed to be partnering on a presentation, and he wants to stick something up on the wall with tape, my brain stops. It just stops. Because there's something wrong that is happening. And mm-hmm. I know in that situation, realistically, it doesn't matter if we are taping things to the wall. First of all, sometimes it's better to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. And then, you know, would the person who asked us about the tape, were they even there? Would they even know that that is something that happened? No. And is that like, would the situation be, we cannot conduct business because a chart is taped to the wall? No, of course not. Of course we would say, keep doing your jobs. But in my head, you know, that is a hard and fast rule. And so that's a big problem. The other problem is if you take every single thing that is a priority to every single person you work with and pile that on and have those things be equal to your own priorities and the things that are important to you, the mental load that that puts on you is so, so big. And you already have so much stuff you're dealing with at work.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't good necessarily to take all those things on board and to have to follow them, you know, because sometimes you have to know, part of, I think, working in corporate or even just being an adult is knowing when the rules are truly rules, knowing what rules can be broken and what things maybe sound like a rule, but are not a rule. And so much of that is political. You know, I was working, you know, my last job, we had a project that I was working on with my boss, and she had given me a directive about, it was something silly, page numbers. No page numbers. We did not want page numbers in
the
document. Yeah. We didn't want page numbers in the document for whatever reason. And she was adamant about it. Adamant. No matter what, no page numbers. And then I went to a review meeting with somebody who was her peer. And they said, you got to have page numbers. And I went, I know what to do here. No page numbers, because for whatever reason, we can't have page numbers. It's no, we can't be flexible on this. This is, you know, this is how it is. And then I get a call from my boss who's like, why didn't you put in the page numbers? Like, because we spend an hour talking about, like, page numbers to me are the worst things in the world. Like, it's like war, poverty, page numbers. And then all of the sudden, I'm supposed to know that because this person said it, because Lauren said it, Lauren apparently is the arbiter of page numbers. And if Lauren wants page numbers, she gets page numbers. That kind of stuff makes me bonkers, because if you're going to set a rule, follow it. Like, why set a policy? Why create a policy and not be consistent with it? Then there should be no policy.
Couple of things. If you're not putting tape on the walls, I can only presume it's because you don't want to damage the paint. And there's a couple of factors involved then. It's how strong the tape is and how long it's going to be there. So if perhaps I just have to talk this one out because it's been killing me. If you're using like blue painter's tape or like scotch tape or something, you know, that low tack, and it's only going to be on for a day or two, go for it. But if it's going to be duct tape and it's going to be there for a week, then you can't do that. That's going to damage the walls. That to me would warrant an intervention of like, this is pointless, but hey, you're going to damage that wall, and then we might all get in trouble for it.
You're so neurodivergent. You have not been listening to a word that I have said, because your brain was just exploding with that fact about tape. Like, you weren't going to be able to sleep tonight if you didn't say the thing about tape. It's good information.
All the reasons I can't sleep.
Yeah. Not that it isn't good information. It's good to know. And that would support, you know, that gives me, I mean, and that's kind of what you have to do, right? Is learn to give yourself some leeway or kind of create your own little backdoor solution as to why whatever rule you see being broken, why that's okay. You know, it's not that, you know, we're not just defying Veronica's tape order. We are making a choice that's probably fine because this tape is going to be up for 2 days. It's not the tape that damages the paint. Everything's going to be fine. So it's not worth choosing this battle. That battle can go away, can go back in the box. And, you know, we can move on with our life. And I think that's an important strategy, because otherwise, first of all, you don't get anything done. And second of all, you're a jerk. You know, the people who say, especially this happens a lot with autistic folks, like, oh, you take everything too seriously. You take everything way too seriously. You can't let things go, and you don't know how to prioritize, or you don't know how to deal with what's important. Like, that's how those things come up, is these little situations. So I don't get paid enough to have an opinion is like, whoa, it's just revelatory for me. And I think, yeah, I think that that is something that, it's one of those things where, you know, people say, oh, can't you get accommodations at work for being a neurodivergent? And the answer is technically no, because neurodivergent is not a medical diagnosis, but many of the neurodivergent things are. But how do you get an accommodation for something like this? Because this isn't, you know, this isn't the only thing that people would have problems with, but this type of figuring this out and these types of statements, like, this is the type of thing that really makes it hard for people at work, because it causes, it can cause performance issues. If your manager, you know, says, oh, you focus on all of these other things that aren't important, it can cause conflict with coworkers. It can definitely cause people to not want to work with you, because, you know, you focus on the wrong things, or you derail the meetings, or it's just one of those things that you have to learn, but nobody tells you that. That's not anywhere in my new employee handbook, you know? And so that's something that is so tough. And of course, there are 1,000 things like that. So it's 1 of 1,000, but you pile the rest of them on, you know, and again, you haven't done any work yet and your brain is already overtaxed. And like, even though I know putting the tape on the wall was totally fine, even though I know, you know, if so-and-so, if the marketing department wanted the document in black and white, they can tell Laura, you know, they can tell the people, you know, they can decide about the page numbers. Like, it's not my, it doesn't need to be my place. I don't need to battle everything. I don't need to be responsible for everything. Even though I know that, I'm still heated now. Telling,
I think it's almost like when you're a little kid and you first find out about, like, smoking is bad and it does these things. And, like, then you get home from school and you go and run and tell your neighbor, like, Mr. Jones, you have to stop smoking because this and this and this and this and this. Like, Mr. Jones knows, like, he's well aware, like, you're breathing fire. We're kind of aware it's not very good for you, but you've taken on this emotional and intellectual load. Cause that was the whole thing of, like, as a creative professional, my opinion and my thought and my labor on that logo is worth something. And my opinion and my effort and my creativity was already being paid for to do a different thing. And so I wasn't going to throw free labor at this dude just to be like, hey, you should change this thing. When, if they like it, great. That's it. Like, like, I was working on a logo for my own business and sent it to a handful of people. You and my client, Doug, very close together. You had the same reaction, which was, ooh, in text with like 6 O's and an H. But, you know, I sent it to a handful of people and they're like, oh, I like it, but I'm not really an expert on logos. And I'm like, well, very, very few people are, and I'm not marketing to them. Like, I want to know what random average person thinks. Like, does this say makes films or not? That's about it. And so it's just, it's definitely a self-preservation tactic, where it's just, it's one way to run into burnout really quick. I think I saw a really good TikTok about this in the last month or so, where someone was talking about our literal form of thinking and just the way we process. And like you said, the lack of prioritizing when your boss hands you a list of things that you have to do, you have to do them. You have to do that whole list. That's why they gave you a list. That's the whole point. But apparently, you don't have to do every single thing. You can do like 60 or 70%, and that's apparently like the acceptable amount. And if you do the 100%, you're going to burn yourself out because you're doing more work than anyone's actually expecting you to do. They just don't mention that part.
That's what's so hard. Another reason, again, why so many neurodivergent folks have trouble in, you know, in creative positions or in, you know, higher level positions, because nobody tells you. How do you know if you're working at in a job where you need to do all the things or you need to do 70% of the things?
Right.
How do you know? And in so many situations, you're supposed to use your own judgment. That's what they say. Use your judgment. Use your judgment.
Have you seen my judgment?
What? It's like, no, I need criteria. How do I know what choice to make? And that's where you get into these, the idea that people, there's some way that you're supposed to just know. You're supposed to just know what the right answer is and what the right thing to do is. But nobody can tell you how to make that choice or how to make that decision. Now, I have learned whatever decision I make is wrong. You know, and that's not true. I'm still a little bit better. My last job, not great. My last boss, not great. But that was something that happened with us a lot, is she would say, use your judgment. And I would. And then it's, oh, you did that wrong. Well, how do I know? Well, use your judgment. Okay. And here we are back again. And those things, the key, like the place where that really hits the hardest is employees, not entry level, so like professional level employees and middle managers, right? So your first line manager, your direct supervisor, that is because you're kind of generally the boots on the ground people. You're producing whatever project, whatever work there is. And so that's when you have the most people to interact with. That's when more of these decisions come up. And there is a reason that a lot of neurodivergent people last for a finite period of time in roles like that. Because even if you can do the job, whatever it is, if you can create the thing or do the thing, it isn't about that. It's about all of these decisions that you have to navigate. And eventually you get to a point where you can't do that anymore, you know? And so that to me is where you start to really have problems with employment statistics with neurodivergent people. If you've finally gotten in a company, if you've navigated that whole thing, and that's another show for another day, then, you know, you've made it into past an entry level kind of position into this professional situation. It's like that's where so many people stop because they can't navigate the politics to get them further than that. And if you're if you do happen to be a neurodivergent manager, that is a very difficult, that's even more difficult of a place to be successful in, because you have to navigate it, but you also have to coach other people to navigate it, and your work is judged on your employees' work. So you have to train them well enough that they know. I mean, the whole thing is just a mess. But you don't see many neurodivergent directors and above for, I think, these reasons, because this is the nitty-gritty that people don't think about when it comes to adapting to the workplace or to, you know, being successful in that type of environment.
So really, I think it could almost come back to, like, supposedly our neurodivergent brains take in like 40% extra sensory input from like everything.
The number always varies. I see everything from 10 to you're going to have smoke coming out of your ears all the time. So I don't know what the actual percentages or amount is. But yes, generally the consensus is neurodivergent brains take in vastly more information constantly than neurotypical brains.
That was a very, very neurodivergent answer. It's like, well, literally, not sure about that number. Anyways, back to the point I'm trying to illustrate. Because we're taking in everything and our brains really don't filter very well, that's how you get neurodivergent overwhelm. That's how, you know, going to the grocery store can send you into a panic attack because there's just so much information coming at you, you know. And then you, you recognize the song on the radio and go, oh, hey, I love this song. I used to drink to, oh my God, I'm old.
The grocery store has the jams. I don't care. But that in the doctor's waiting room, that is where I rock now, is the grocery store and the doctor's office waiting room. So don't knock
hey,
it.
That's good stuff. It's like companies putting a rainbow flag on their logo for a month. Like, don't you, they're just pandering to you. It's like, yes, for once, it's nice to be pandered to. I think it's because everything comes in as data and as input at kind of the same importance. There isn't a particular filter there. And that seems to be the same as if I have a list of things I have to do, I'm going to do all of the things. I'm reminded of doing touch-ups in a fancy condo downtown or condo unit. You know, people moved in and they had like a year's worth of warranty work. And so I basically show up every day and they hand me a list of apartment numbers and things that need to be done. And that was amazing because just that list of things had to be done. There was no prioritizing. You know, it might have been helpful politically for me to go work on the penthouse suite of that guy from the Avs, but nobody actually cared that much. Mm-hmm. And I could just complete my list and then go home, or get as much of the list as I could and then go home.
So you didn't have to pick your battles.
No, it was all one big battle.
It was one big battle.
And there
was
no one else fighting it. Mm-hmm. So it was just me chipping away at whatever I could each day.
Yeah, because I think this is a symptom of a much broader issue, right? Because work is not the only place that this happens. You know, so the grocery store, if you put on the list that we need Heinz fire roasted tomato sauce, I am going to scour the earth to find that exact tomato sauce. If they have Heinz tomato sauce, but it's not fire roasted, that's not going to be okay. If they have fire roasted tomato sauce, but it isn't Heinz, that's not okay. If it's Heinz fire roasted tomato paste, that's not okay. And I will spin until I can find the thing. And then I get home and talk to you and say, hey, they didn't have this. And you're like, oh, just whatever would have been fine. I think that kind of situation happens in households and in relationships because you have to when you're with a partner, you have to prioritize, right? You have to know what's important to them and what is not, so that you focus on the right things. You know, picking up the kids is not as important as making sure the towels are folded the right way. You know, go pick up the kids and then fold the towels. But if you're so focused on the towels needing to be done, then big bad problems happen. There are just, these are all choices that we have to make. And I think one of the things that neurotypical people do not understand is that all of these situations that they are able to use their intuition, this, oh, use your judgment, go with your gut, oh, you just know. Those decisions that their brain sort of does on autopilot that they don't need to throw effort at, we have to. All of those decisions are manual because you have to assess the situation. You have to kind of weigh it all out and pick the right thing and move it, because there are consequences to each and every one. And when you don't know what the priority is or what things are important, you're kind of putting, I mean, imagine if you needed to put as much thought and energy into folding towels as you did to buying a car. Because to you, those are both situations where you have to make a decision. So you've got to do it the same way. think of how exhausting that is and how time-consuming that is and how stressful that is. But if you don't have an automatic pilot that makes those decisions, then you got to fly the damn plane yourself. So it's really tough.
Where do you even find the MSRP for terry cloth? Like, where am I supposed to get? Again, my brain just wants context. Context is for kings. I have never agreed with a bad guy in a TV show ever more than when Lorca said that universal law is for lackeys. Context is for kings. Because why do you need the fire roasted Heinz chunk tomatoes? Do you need them because it's a film project and we need to see the label that says Heinz? Do we need diced tomatoes? Does it specifically have to be fire roasted diced tomatoes? Could we just use regular diced tomatoes and a couple of drops of liquid smoke? Like, what's the purpose of what we're trying to accomplish with this thing? And without that specific context and that specific knowledge, all I know is to just keep searching for this one specific thing until the grocery store kicks me out. Right? Like, it's just.
They let you stay a good long time before they'll trespass you, fortunately. But they will not let you come back multiple times and do that before they file for a restraining order. So you got to be careful, but you've got some leeway on the grocery store decisions. But that's such a good point about context, because the context is, if you don't have intuition, context is sort of that substitute, because I think that's what neurotypical brains are doing when they are using their judgment. What they're really doing is reading the context. They're understanding the big picture so that they can determine what should be important and why. So if you are trying to ease that process out for, hey, I'm neurodivergent and I don't know what I should be working on or what to get from the grocery store, you're exactly right. You can say, oh, okay, well, they're not shooting it, you know, so it doesn't need to have this thing on the label. And really, it doesn't need to be fire roasted. Like, at the end of the day, we like that. But if it's just tomatoes, it's fine. Then that allows you to make a good decision. So when we communicate, you look like you have something to say.
It just occurred to me, for I think the first time ever, that intuition and judgment like that is actually an exclusionary process. Like, you are ignoring chunks of information and non-relevant data more than you are picking a thing.
But which pieces to ignore? You know, and you have to prioritize whose decision is it? Was it, what is the situation? You know, all of those things, you're exactly right, come down to what to ignore and what to pay attention to. And those are judgment calls, but those are the times that you need to use that context to make those decisions.
All right. Well, what's a battle that you can never, ever walk away from? Like, what is your thing that just always draws you in?
If something is unfair to a group of people, you know, if we are designing something, you know, if we're designing an event, I want to know, you know, how are the people in the back going to participate as fully as the people up in front? You know, if there is a prize, you know, and it's earbuds, how are we going to make sure that the Android people are able to participate and not just the iPhone people? You know, I need everything to be fair to the point where that can be problematic, because you can't make everything fair for everybody. And you have to make decisions.
Not with that attitude.
And so that is the toughest one for me to put into a reasonable context, because sometimes, like, to me, so there was a discussion at my last job about closed captions in videos. Because in the way that these videos were produced, it was expensive to get captions and to get good captions because the system that they were using didn't, that wasn't a feature it had. And so the question was then, so the question first was, well, can we put video content out without closed captions? And is this important enough that even though we don't know exactly how many people need closed captions or would benefit from closed captions, do we make that decision anyway to spend the money and the time, you know, the extra couple of weeks to make that call? And in business, of course, you often have to justify. You know, if I'm proposing something that's going to cost us an extra $10,000 in an extra 4 weeks, I need to be able to say, here's what the benefit is. Here's the ROI. Here's what we're getting back. And ultimately, because we didn't know how many people would need closed captions, how many people would use them, and it was going to add all this time and cost, the decision was to include transcripts instead of closed captions, which is not the same. Yep. It is not the same as captions. And that was a very tough one for me to move on from, because to me, there is a right answer. You do the captions. That's it.
That's the correct thing to do for accessibility and for inclusivity. And you are very, very, I don't know, defensive, but in like the good sense. Like I'm always brought back to like when you were watching tennis live with your mom and she had to have her sun umbrella up and like you checked beforehand and this is like the area of the seating where people with disabilities are to be accommodated and she's got MS and can't get overheated and can't sit in the sun. So there's a sun umbrella. And somebody like made a sideways comment about it, I remember.
Yeah, somebody. It was between points, so nobody was playing, and it was so my mom would put her umbrella up, and one of the security guards came down and said, "Oh, you can't have that umbrella," and I won't say I lost it totally. I will say I engaged in some very passionate back and forth. Ultimately, we came to a peaceful resolution. But I did explain the lengths that I was willing to go to get to the end that I wanted, which was she needed to be able to use her umbrella. When it is my family or when it's my people, that is, I mean, at least in a business setting, I can sort of, like, I don't like the decision, but I can move on. You know, I've gotten to that point. When it's my family, I'm not there. I can't. That makes it impossible for me not to pick that battle. I'm charging in. Weapons blazing anytime. And yeah, one day, I just pray I don't get videotaped. One day it'll happen. I'm going to end up on TikTok, you know, me at a hospital or something going crazy because I need something. But that's one where I can't prioritize.
All right, now what can I not walk away from? Because I can't think of an example, but I imagine you can. I mean,
commercials on streaming services.
Ugh! How dare they? Ugh.
You're better at it than I am because you evaluate every rule, so you already discard half the rules anyway. Like, you know, I'm just going to do the thing, and if somebody yells at us, you know, we'll deal with that. If we get in trouble, we'll deal with that then. this rule is dumb. So you don't put the pressure on yourself that I do to follow along with what everybody wants and what everybody, you know, every single thing that you should be doing. So it's not as tough for you as it is for me, which is why I think you are sort of my inspiration when, even when I work with my own clients on this, because this is something over, you know, over 25 years, fortunately, I've been able to work through and work on. You know, my hardest part now is remembering that, you know, to take a step back to be able to evaluate all of this before the words get out of my mouth, you know, to make, have the decision made about whether or not I should be the tape on the wall warrior before I have told the CEO of our company that he's not allowed to tape anything on the wall in the office. So, you know, I'm working on that. I'm not quite fully there yet, but I'm much better than I was, you know, when I was 20. When I work with clients, I think taking them through one of the processes that you talked about, which is walking them with them through the what if, you know, let's say you did, you know, let somebody put tape on the wall. Well, let's say you did make this decision to, you know, make the thing, not say anything about it being blue and green. What is going to happen? Let's walk that through to the end to see what the worst case scenario is and see how bad would that really be? Because sometimes that is enough to make you realize, oh, okay, this is not my battle. You know, this is a battle that if somebody else wants to fight it, they are welcome to. Or you say, okay, well, if I don't intervene, then really bad things are going to happen. There's going to, and in business, it's usually there's going to be a cost. There's going to be a money overrun. This is going to affect our budget, you know, our timeline. It's going to affect customer service, something. And so that kind of helps you decide which things are on your shoulders and when you should kind of use your efforts and when you shouldn't. Another way that you can do that is, like you said, your time is valuable. Your time and your brain space is valuable. So people think that you're, you know, you're off the clock, but if you are laying up all night thinking about this logo and what it should look like, that is valuable brain time that you should be getting compensated for using. And if you're not, then you're not going to use it for that decision. So get what is due, and that can help you make the decision too. And I think that's a really good way to approach it. You can also too look at it like kind of what are the things about this? What are the components of this? And how critical are they? What are we trying to do with this? Like you said, context. What are we trying to do here? And what's our main objective? And what about these decisions affect our main objective? If nothing about what happens here affects the main objective, then that's probably a battle we can walk away from. If it does really impact our main objective, then maybe that's something that you want to take a look at, you know, intervening. But it definitely is about slowing down and really thinking it out. And the good thing is, the more you do that, the more it becomes second nature. Because I remember, even with you, thinking through some of these decisions years ago, and it was not as easy for you to walk away from a discussion, even if that was not something that you were working on. How long was it before you were able to make choices like this and move on with your life?
I don't know that I can now. I don't, like, how long since when to when? It seems like a very gradual process. Like, I don't know. I think the HRT definitely helps. Functional ADHD meds definitely help. It's easier to ignore stuff, which is weird. Like, here, take this little bit of meth. It'll make the world softer.
I feel like I need to break in and explain some things right now. HRT is the hormone therapy. So that is important. And
hormone replacement therapy.
Hormone replacement therapy. And you're not actually doing meth, right? Just the ADHD medicine is an amphetamine, which is similar to meth, but you're not recommending meth for our loyal listeners.
I don't recommend anyone do any of the things that I do. No, do not use my judgment as a short-term, like, shortcut for your judgment. Have you seen my choice? Do you have any idea how many pieces of metal I've paid to have stuck through my skin? Like, no.
Valid. Well, in this instance, I think you're right. I think working on it as an issue in particular is helpful, but I also think it makes sense that when more things in your life are in balance, the easier it is to make these decisions. It's also a willpower thing. You know, you have more points left or more spoons left at the beginning of the day. So maybe, you know yourself. And if you're having a conversation at 4 o'clock or you're having a meeting at 4 o'clock, then maybe that is the call that you keep yourself on mute because you're not able to judge appropriately because it's late in the day and you don't have the faculties that you need to have to be able to make that decision. You can always just ask to, you know, maybe it's, can we table this until tomorrow? Or jot it down and look at it again the next day and see if you still feel as passionately about it as you did. Maybe reach out to the person, you know, if it's somebody else's battle, find out if, do they need help? You know, is this something that they need you to be their warrior on? Or is this something that they've probably got, you know, and you can find out, hey, you mentioned this, how important is it? How much of a priority is it for you? And you might find out that it is nothing. You know, it was an offhand comment. It was something that isn't worth even to them. And the last thing you want to do is be hyper about something that the person you're doing on behalf of doesn't really care about. So I think doing some investigation, understanding where you are in your own mental state, you know, are you at your best time to be making decisions or are you not? And maybe we should examine that later using your resources. These are all good things. And with practice, it does get better. It gets more natural. It gets easier to do and it becomes easier to walk away from and kind of swallow the outcome of it and move on with your life. That's what, you know, this is what your work bestie is for, is talking about these kinds of things, you know, in the break room after work, as opposed to bringing these up to your boss in the middle of a deadline. So it all gets easier, but it is something to be aware of and something to be aware of in yourself, because a lot of us don't figure this out about ourselves until we're in trouble, till we've lost a job, till it is on the performance review. So knowing this about yourself is very, very important.
Okay, but when you put ads on the streaming service, like, I'm comparing paying you for the thing or just like pirating the thing. And when you put ads on it, the experience of paying for the thing is worse than just pirating the thing.
Babe, I already paid for the no ad option on Amazon Prime for you. I didn't ask you.
Just like Paramount.
It's okay. It's okay.
But they don't always. Sometimes
it's okay. Sorry.
Okay.
We're good.
Okay. But
so what else, other than complaining about commercials on streaming services, what else do you have going on that you want to let people know about? Where can they find you? Where can they find us?
If you like our show and you would like to support us, it'd be really awesome if you rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That pushes us up into the eyes of the all-knowing and ever-present algorithm. You can find and follow us on Facebook. We're there as the Gifted Kid Messy Adult page. And if you have a topic that you'd like us to cover, you can email us at giftedkidmessyadult@gmail.com. And if you want some small scale video production, you can find me at Ellie Michaels Productions if you're, you know, in Colorado, because I'm not leaving the state. Where can people find you?
We are also posting episodes on YouTube, so that is a great place to throw some comments in and to ask some questions and interact with us. If you would like a free coaching session or assessment, please reach out to me at coachjessicamichaels.com. And I am also, it is the speaking season, so I am also booking now for speaking engagements throughout the year. So if you want me to come and talk to your group or talk to your business about neurodiversity, reach out to me as well.
Well, I think that wraps this up for this episode. Until next time, I've been Ellie Michaels.
I'm Jessica Michaels.
Take care of each other out there.